The nonprofit MBA purpose is to provide new business insights and fresh creative ideas for executive directors and their teams that will help them improve their organization. Here is your host, Stephen Halasnik.
Welcome, everyone. Good morning. Good morning, our time. My name is Stephen Halasnik. I will be your host for today's Nonprofit MBA podcast, as I've been for 7 years now. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm co-founder of Financing Solutions. And Financing Solutions is the leading provider in the United States for nonprofits for lines of credit. Yeah, there's a company that specializes in lines of credit for nonprofits. If you don't know that, it's not unusual, because there are just, it's very, very hard for a nonprofit to get approved for a line of credit. And that's what we specialize in. We are the largest provider in 48 states. So actually, it's 47 states. The other three states we don't work in. So if you're interested in getting a line of credit, it's a very, very popular product. If you think you're unique to having uneven cash flow, you're not. That's something that's very common in the nonprofit sector, and that's what a line of credit is great for. Please visit our website at nonprofitmbapodcast.com. And you can learn more and get a free offer if you see if you're qualified, those type of things. It's really very popular. Again, it's nonprofitmbapodcast.com. Today, I am very excited to be speaking with John Lepp from Agents of Good. And John Lepp is the author of Creative Deviations, John Lepp, the author of Creative Deviations, is a direct response marketing and graphic design expert with over 25 years of experience working with charities around the world to help them tell better stories and to inspire donors to give both online and offline. The name of his company, just so you know, it is Agents of Change. And he is a respected and coveted international speaker who has traveled the world helping fundraisers be more human and vulnerable to their other amazing humans we call donors. John, welcome to today's Nonprofit MBA podcast.
Thank you, Stephen. Pleasure to be here.
So websites have been around, I don't know, 20 years now? Longer than that. Let's see, yeah, 35 years?
Yeah, a long time. Since 96, yeah. 97, 98.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and they go through generations of change where, you know, every 5 years or so, there's a new theme to what they're trying to do and tell. So if you get your website redesigned, you know, you have to kind of, there's something new that's going on at the time. If you had to say for nonprofits right now, if someone was redesigning their website, what is kind of the theme that's popular now?
Theme? Well, again, I am a marketing person, so I kind of look at it from a marketing point of view.
And of course,
knowing your audience is probably the most important thing. Because sometimes you go to a website for a charity and do I want to read about events? Do I want to give? If you can even find that give button, there's so many different things to look at and different types of content. And the idea of analysis paralysis, right? In the context of how our brains work, the more decisions I have to make to do something, buy something, click on something, the less I'm going to do it. So websites notoriously have too much content. Most of the time, no one's ever going to look at a read. So if you're trying to build a website for donors, build a website for donors, which allows them to do the one thing they're there to do, which is to give you support and give you funds.
Yeah.
So obviously, that's the main thing, is I see too many websites for charities that are still way too complicated with way too much content. But analytics will tell you what people are looking at or not looking at. So it can be your friend, but that's a key thing.
So simplistic design is the, especially for nonprofits, where probably your number one thing is donation. And I would say probably maybe branding too, so that, you know, people know you're authentic. They know what you do. Keep it simple that way. Is that fair enough, John?
Absolutely. I mean, the more you can say, I mean, simplicity is kind of my key thing. Do you mean the more we can communicate to each other simplistically, so I'm clear in what I'm asking you to do, again, the more likely you're going to do the thing that I want you to do. But we have a tendency to overcomplicate things far, far too much. So again, if you know who your audience is and what they're there for, then build it around them. But the other key problem is sometimes the people who are building these websites or emails or even direct mail, which is my specialty, aren't the people who are actually the end user. And so they're designing things the way they want to design things rather than the way they should be designed, which are very much different things most of the time. And so that's a key component of our work too, is again, knowing, actually acknowledging who the actual audience is and designing the system or the experience around their needs, not yours. Because that's sometimes the problem with branding is that professional vanity of like making sure we look like something quite big and important. Well, it has little to do with the needs of a donor and what they want to do with you. So we have to keep these things in check a little bit.
Yeah, we look at a lot of the web as a company. We look at a lot of websites because that's part of criteria when we're looking to approve someone for a line of credit. So we're going to look at their website. And, I would just say to you in general, the websites at a lot of these organizations are really, really weak. And I'm on a board of this nonprofit. Our website is atrocious. I keep saying we got to get this updated. We got to get this updated, and it really makes the organization that I'm a part of look schleppy, looks really unprofessional. And if you want to give money to them, I try to keep saying to the exec director, I said I wouldn't give money to you guys. The website looks it doesn't look professional. It's rinky dink. I think it's short-sighted, and when someone says, well, we don't have the money to redo our website, I'm like, you don't have the money not to do your website. So I think it's important. And then I think as a branding thing, I think having, as a nonprofit gets bigger, right, I think you start looking at having a cohesive message throughout your email campaign, through your website. Is that fair to say? Is that still, kind of true?
I like to remind people you are in a position potentially of having conversations with these other people we call donors. And so even if you and I are having a conversation, and even if you and I talked once a month, every month of the year, there might be a thread in terms of the things we keep coming back to, but the conversation would be different every single time. It'd be filled with a range of emotions. True. It'd be filled with the values of the things that we care about and we stand for, and we might argue about them and we may go, yeah, that's right. Whatever. And that's what charities are missing, is actual humanness. The problem with being like having a website or a mail or whatever it is looking professional, it's all about a level of appropriateness. If you're a, if you're a small one person shop that, no one's ever heard of, there's a certain level of professionalism I would expect. But I can tell you time and time again, even for the most biggest charities, the more personal something looks, sounds, comes across, the more money it raises or the more effective it is, whatever the goal is for the piece and stuff. But we get tied up in this idea of like, we're supposed to be this kind of like really serious professional entity. Well, I'm not interested in engaging with really serious professional people. I want to get my sleeves rolled up. I want to get into it. Let's just argue. Let's just get like into passion about a topic and a thing. And when we do that as a charity, donors listen, because then also you have to create space for them to talk back to you. So these are things, again, in my work, I try to do all the time. I want donors talking to me. The level of professionalism, it can be sometimes like a bubble wrap we put around ourselves so we don't get judged too harshly. F that. It isn't like I'm here to be judged. I'm here for people to go, I don't like this guy or I don't like this charity, but at least you're being unique. You have a unique voice. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Do you think that comes off in what you say? Like, is the verbiage the key to being authentic, or are you saying that the design that you're using for the email template, the marketing material you're sending out, the website, that's less important than the actual verbiage to really personalize it? I mean, storytelling for nonprofits, that and it's not out of vogue by any mean, but that's been said for 20 years now. storytelling, you know, is it second nature for nonprofits now?
Storytelling?
Yes.
Oh God, no.
So they're still struggling with it.
I think I talked to a lot of organizations who are like, here's my great story. This letter I sent out to donors and it bombed and I don't know why. And I said, because you're actually missing a key part of marketing, which is asking me for something.
Oh.
We spend a lot of time, a lot of charities spend time going, looking for stories here, there, asking, do you have a story? But they actually don't even know what they're asking for first, which is what you actually need. Right. You don't need a story. If you know what you're asking for, if you know why I'm asking you for something, I don't necessarily need a story. I just need a compelling reason for me to consider giving it to you. If I can wrap a story around it, yes, it's the emotional part that makes us like get inspired or move us like in some capacity to actually check that box, write that check, or do whatever I want. But I've done many appeals that have never had any story at all. Story is not that important. That story is important because it's what moves us and what connects us. But in fundraising, you need a good offer. You need to be crystal clear on what you're asking for.
It makes sense to me. And I don't know if I'll be able to articulate this, but that nonprofits struggle with the ask because they really are there. They want to help their cause. And to them, it's about the services and what they're providing to the people or what the purpose. And they think of raising money as the secondary part of what they do, whereas it's really in almost everything they do, it needs to be the first thing that they're thinking about, right? Because we're talking about in website design, right? The first thing we talked about is where are you going to put the donate button, right? Right. And, we talked about email campaigns. Yeah, you're telling me, which makes complete sense, what's your ask? I don't think people's minds go there first. And it's good to hear from you. That's why it's great to have a consultant like yourself who's like reminding you what's the purpose of this.
Your existence, it's not a case for support. Just like back to December 31st almost isn't a case for support. But we think of these things first. Asking is scary. It's easy for me, again, as a consultant, to go, we'll just ask more. Asking is the scariest part of all of this work because it's the one moment we're going to get judged. So if I'm talking to you and I get around finally asking you to give me $5,000 for some coaching, I have to now hold my breath. And you could say, what a jerk, and no. Or you can say, absolutely. You know, but it's the scariest moment. And for if you're major gifts or individual giving, it's the scariest moment. And a lot of people are so afraid of it. They don't want to do it. They don't want to ask for something in their appeal because they're afraid that someone's not going to do something. They're not going to do it. Well, they don't do anything at all because they've never got asked to do anything. So it's part of the problem. And I'm like, people, if you're not comfortable with asking, you have to craft compelling reasons for me to give to you. That's your job. And your job is to ask me for help. Otherwise, what are you doing? Again, I'm not really sure what you're doing here. So it's the scariest part, but it's the most important part.
What do you think is like the nonprofits that you'll work with and you come into them for, you know, when you meet them for the first time, what have you noticed with the executive directors or board members or, you know, whoever your contact is, when you notice a nonprofit that is really good at doing what you just said, really good at zeroing in at, okay, let's on the website, let's make sure we have a donate button. When I am out talking to people, asking for money, I go and I make sure they understand what I'm asking for in an email campaign where we are telling them early on what our ask is or however you want to word it. What if you, like, it's a cultural thing, right? What if you notice in nonprofits that have come to you and you're like, oh, they get it?
Oh, that's a good question. Usually they understand they're a collection of different voices, unique voices. Usually they understand that this is emotional work, that they have needs, and people like their donors can help them with those needs, and they know how to ask and get out of the way. They really know how to make sure that they tell donors how much they appreciate them and show them what they did with their giving. There's an organization I give to called Redwood in Toronto. It's a shelter. And I've been a monthly donor for a long time, and an individual donor, single gift donor. And every summer they do the summer campaign where they're trying to raise money to send kids to like Canada's Wonderland, the big park where they can go have pizza and all that stuff. And I'm like, every kid should have pizza in the amusement park. There's no way I'm not giving you this thing. And so I give them a chunk of money every summer on top of my monthly gift. And they do some very critical things. I always get a thank you card within 48 hours of my giving. They attach my receipt usually. They write out a beautiful letter note to me about thank you for your gift of $250. We can't wait to see the look on these kids' faces when we do this thing with them. They're very, very good at telling me what they're going to do with my gift or what they did with my gift. And they make me feel really good. They could call me the next day and ask me for another $250 and I would give it to them. And that's true of all donors. This isn't true of me. It's true of all donors. We spend so much time organizationally, hours and hours and hours and hours talking about asking. If we invested a fraction of that into thanking and a fraction of that to reporting back to our donors what we actually did with their gift, this would be a completely different sector. But all we ever do is talk about asking all the time. We spend no time on gratitude or
anything. Yeah, I think we, you know, I hear it a lot from other podcasts, and I've had personal experience of not being thanked. And believe me, it's something that really bugged me, especially because it was quite a big donation I made. But an idea popped into my head, and that is, I think if you're running a nonprofit and you have, let's say, a couple of people that are working for you, I would delegate the responsibility of somebody to hold our organization accountable to like a director of saying thank you. That would be their title, right? Like, they could have this as a, they would have this as a part of their existing job. But what I would ask that person to do is to say, your job, part of your job is to make sure that we are always saying thank you and that we have programs in place to say thank you, because hold us accountable so that I don't forget, you know. And because you're absolutely right. Our part of your email, when you're hired to do email marketing campaigns, do they ask you to have a thank you follow-up campaign?
Well, I recommend it. I mean, I when I start working with the organization, the first things I look at is their data, like their list of people they're talking to. And then I want to look at their actual, like, what happens when I give you a gift. And often I just do it. In fact, I just did a audit for an organization, and part of my audit, I gave a first-time gift to them, and I got my auto receipt right away. And it's been almost 3 weeks now. I haven't heard anything else, nothing from any channel anywhere. So I actually emailed my colleague there and I said, just so you know, I've not gotten this welcome series that I'm reviewing this audit. And she's like, yeah, we were told not to send anything out for a good 4 weeks after the first gift. And I was like, you have been misinformed. That is incorrect information. So one of my recommendations is that needs to be moved up within the first 24, 48 hours. And it should be one email full of tons of crap. It should be 3 or 4 or 5 different like email series, of which there should be an ask monthly, probably within the third or fourth one. So there is some like, how, again, people are so afraid to ask for things, or it's like bug donors. You know, it's not about bugging donors. They know why they're there. You're there to let them do what they want to do, which is help you. Why are we so afraid of letting them help us? I don't understand it. So much of this work is just boggles my mind, the decision making that people make, because they're coming from their own fear factor, their own subjective fears about like, oh my God, I would hate this. Well, you're not probably the donor anyways, and they don't hate it. Give them great experiences as donors.
I like the word that you use, audit. So have you had nonprofits come to you and say, you know, I want you to audit our communication methods and make recommendations as to what you think we should do. Is that, have you had that type of conversation with people?
Yeah, we do it quite often. I do a mini one if we're going to start working with a new client, because I need to understand what the donor's been seeing. So I have to look at it, and I have to look at how it performed and that sort of thing. But sometimes people are like, yes, here's all the stuff our donor's seen in the last year, every thank you note, every welcome your email, every DMEM appeal, everything, and tell us what you see. And so we go through and write all our recommendations. Like, these are things you can fix right now. Here's some things that'll take a little bit of time. And then here's where we're going. This is where you should be going with this.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I love it too. It's really interesting. And it's insightful to the organization, because you have Sally working on this over here. You have Bob doing this over here. And sometimes they don't even know. Like, they don't even know where the donor goes or what they get next, because everyone's working on their own little thing. And so someone to step back and look at all at one time is very informative to everybody. Very informative.
Yeah. You know, I just think it just dawned on me. It's just like, you know, John, I just think that it would be like, I would just add you to my staff, like as a consultant, because like we all want to do, we all try to do more, and we really don't want to do more. We don't want to think about another fundraiser. We don't want to think about another donation campaign. An additional one. We just want to do what we're doing better and more efficiently and more, you know, and not efficiently, more with better quality, with better results. So I'm like, why wouldn't I bring John on? Because if I'm trying to grow my nonprofit, to me, it's a no-brainer that if I improve my communication method, regardless of the ask or regardless if it's a thank you, really, really, both of those are the key. And we improve in those things. It makes no sense that John's going to pay for himself.
No, absolutely. Right?
In fact, I would measure you that way. I'd say, John, you know, my revenue's this right now.
Yeah.
In a year from now, I want my revenue to be here. Okay. And you know, this is what you're going to cost me. Okay. Yeah. It's a no brainer to me. You know. And so, is that fair to say?
Yeah, I certainly don't want to sound like I'm trying to sell myself to anybody or anything like that. But yeah, usually when I walk in with I do my coaching as well. And there's usually a few key things. I want to give them quick wins. If you're going to spend, say, $4,000 in coaching with me, I want to make sure that thing I told you to do makes you money right away. Because someone's looking at it who knows nothing about me and going, what did we spend $4,000 on this guy for, or this firm or whatever? So there are things usually that can be fixed immediately, that can immediately help you raise more money.
Yeah. And let's be clear, John and I don't know each other.
No, we
talked, you know, you could use any marketing consultant, you know, John's on today's podcast. I just think of completely, like, I remember a while ago, it never kind of, I was hiring what's called an SEO consultant. This is a while ago, right? And I said to the SEO consultant, I said, why don't you take a percentage of how much you grow my business? Why don't you just take a percentage of that? You know, if you say that right now, I'll hire you in a second. You know, and they wouldn't do it, because, you know, they said that there's too many other things that they can't control. So, you know, but, you know, anyway, I like the accountability that's involved in something like that. And especially if you need to convince a board, hey, I want to hire a consultant, and I believe if we spend this amount of money, this is how much he's going to generate or she's going to generate. I think it's an easy sell, honestly, because to me as a business person, it's kind of a no-brainer. And then also, who likes to run around with their head cut off trying to do all these other programs? It's just a lot better to streamline things and to be better at the things that you do existing than just to keep adding more and more and more. So we mentioned the first thing that you've seen as a trend is, you know, streamlining a website, making it very purposeful. What other things are you seeing that's very trendy right now when it comes to marketing material, website design? And we talked about storytelling, you know, those type of things. What else are you seeing in that's being very it's very common now?
Well, what is trendy and common? I think they're kind of the same things, but they're not the things you'd want to see necessarily. So in the US, you have like 1.5 million charities. If you're a donor, like I think of my mother-in-law, she is your donor. Most of your donors, especially with mail, for example, will be like 65 to 95 years old. during the holiday time, anywhere from October on, she can get between 30 to 40 pieces of mail every single day. Most of them, 90% of them, are probably number 10 white envelopes. They probably have an 8.5 by 11 letter with a maybe small little coupon in it, maybe. Maybe a reply envelope, maybe not. And she gets all of this all the time. And it basically just talks about how amazing we're doing, these are things we're doing, and give us some money because we need it. And that's the trend. That's what everyone's doing. And in, you know, my work, I'm always trying to taint, like, I have 3 seconds when she reaches into her mailbox to make sure she looks at my thing first. How can I dominate her mailbox? And I know how to dominate her mailbox. I know the things I need to do to stand out so she looks at my thing first. So a lot of it comes down to not doing a white number 10 envelope. Making it look very personal can work. You're getting 80% of your revenue. Sorry, you're getting 8% of your revenue from 20% of your donors. You need to be focusing on making sure they get the best experience as a donor with you that you possibly can. So it's the other things, we're spending a lot of money on people who are never going to give to us. So we're watering everything down because we're trying to spend a small amount of money on tons of people, most of which who don't care. And so again, we're creating all these problems, but the trend is that everyone's doing what everyone else is doing all the time. And we're trying to make it as cheap and cheerful as possible. Well, that's not setting yourself up for a good donor experience in any channel, online or offline.
Are you still recommending direct mail?
Oh, that's almost dropped an F-bomb. Absolutely. Direct mail is still one of the biggest ways that donors support your organization.
Versus email.
Versus email is too, I mean, how much email do you get every day? Your donors get a lot too. And again, most of it is just from marketing comms people who are about professional vanity, not actually connecting to me as a human and talking to me directly at all. So again, all I'm asking is the more human you can be in any channel, the better you're going to do, whatever the objective is.
Have you had any conversations with any executive directors who've said to you, I don't want to do any direct mail. I want to reduce the amount of email I'm doing. I don't want to do something else.
Yeah.
And tell me about that.
Mail's expensive. So people are like, I don't want to spend, let's just do a digital newsletter instead. The problem is that donors like mail. In fact, even like people trying to find new donors, people like in our age group, like the Generation Xers or the Wires even, they love getting mail because they never get any. All they get is ever is shitty bills from someone maybe or something about that loan, but they never get mail either. So again, mail is still very, very effective. And I've seen people go, we're going to get rid of the mail program and just do all digital because it's cheaper. It's definitely not cheaper. In fact, doing that becomes the most expensive mistake you could possibly make because people do like getting mail. Yes, donors are, especially on the other side of COVID, are moving online a bit more, but online giving, according to Blackbaud, they would probably know a few things, is what, 10, 11% of all giving happens online? So donors are going online, and I make sure that I make it easy for them to do that sometimes, but donors love getting out their check, especially in the US, getting out their checkbook, writing a check, putting in an envelope, mailing it in. So if you remove that away from them, then they won't do anything. So again, it's just I know it's expensive. That's why you need to make sure you're doing as smartly as possible. And when I do my coaching work, I see lots of organizations who are not doing very smartly because they've never looked at their data. Half time, I'm like, where did these people come from? And they're like, I have no idea. I'm like, well, you're dead already. Like, if you don't know
who's they should parse it. They should like, put it in segments. Yeah,
and they segmentation. Sorry, what now? And I'm like, you can't talk to an audience of this big exactly the same because they're not the same. They're not the same people. You're not doing mass marketing. You're doing direct marketing. And if you want to do mass marketing, then do that. But you just won't raise any money. So direct marketing is about talking to me as directly as possible, which means you need to do segmentation, which means you have to know who you're talking to. You have to do this work. You can't just, that's my frustration. Sometimes people want to put in the work and just want to like check a box and go home and drink wine on my couch. And I'm like, this isn't about that. This is an obsessive craft we do, direct response and direct marketing. You need to obsess and be thinking about this all the time because these donors deserve that. They deserve that from us.
And so does your cause. Right? I mean, if you really want to help your cause, you understand your marketing like the back of your hand.
Yeah, you don't want to do it, then don't do it. Go work somewhere else. I'm fine with that. Yeah. We have way too many people in the sector who just, it's like they just, ugh, feels to them. And I'm like, then go away, because you're hurting everything. Our world, our donors, everything, by your attitude and your desire just to check a box and go home. I don't want anyone here to check a box.
Yeah, I mean, just to give everybody some background too, 90% of my job at the companies I've owned is the marketing. Like, I spend all my time understanding who my clients are, who the prospects are, you know, our marketing digital campaign, what works, what doesn't work, what is my return on my investment. You know, I'm constantly measuring things. And if you can't, you know, there's an old adage, if you can't measure, you can't manage. So you have to be able to measure everything. And so that leads me into my next question, which I had thought about before. And that was, is there statistics that show that in general, I wouldn't think there would be, but email marketing leads to X amount of dollars and regular traditional print mailings leads to you know, X amount of dollars. I don't think it would, right? I mean, I think you would have to take each individual organization to come up with that figure. And what made me think about it was, like, I was just telling John, I just got back from Costa Rica for an 8-day vacation, and I didn't even bother holding my mail. Right. I'm like, I don't get that much mail. Right. So I come back and I was right. I only had 10 pieces of mail, you know, maybe 15 pieces of mail, not even that, like 10. And I would say 30% of them were political campaigns. Right. Two of them were to my wife, who passed away 3 years ago. You know, one was a check that, you know, and the other stuff was like for pizza delivery and that type of stuff. So it wasn't much at all. And that's a good thing, because you can stand out, right? You can really stand out with the right type of thing. So, John, go back to my original questions. Is there any actual data to support direct mail versus email?
Your answer to that, your own question, was pretty good. I mean, it does depend on the organization. There are some organizations who are doing only digital programs, but they still understand the fundamentals of really good direct response and direct marketing. Like you said, list is king queen of it all. Like, 50% of the success or failure depends on who you're talking to. If they don't care, you're done. Nothing else matters. Okay. What you ask them for, 20-30% success or failure, is what are you asking for? Do I care? Can I solve this problem with you? How does it relate to me as a human being? Why should I care about this right now? And then there's a creative element of it, what it looks. Everyone wants to talk about creative because it's what we all see. It's visual, it's fun, but the creative is only like a small 10% of success failure comes down to what it looks like. So you need to spend time and energy on do you have the right people that care about what you're talking, want to talk to them about? And if the answers are no, I don't know, then digital or mail doesn't matter. It's going to fail.
Yeah.
So again, it's not, you can't blame the channel. It's not the channel's fault. If you do mail and it doesn't work, you can't say, oh, mail's dead, it doesn't work. And that's what people do. They go, well, we did mailings and they bombed. Well, there's other questions to get asked. Why did it bomb? Who were you mailing? Where did they come from? How did they find you? How did they get on this list? What do they care about? When did they last give to you? You know, like, these are things you need to know. You know, you and I both know this very, very well and stuff. So it's, don't blame the channel, and certainly don't blame the donor. Like, we'd like to blame donors too. Like, oh, they're tired of giving to us. No, they're not. They're tired of your shitty appeals. So it's not their fault. It's your job. This is your job to figure this stuff out, and you need to figure it out the best you can. But if you have a bad list on email or mail, it will bomb. Or
anything. Yeah, I forgot what the, it's been a while since I looked at it. It's not the 5 P's, but it's for marketing. Review your message, review your list, review. Do you remember that? I forgot. It used to be like, I used to use it a lot, because when I was doing a marketing campaign, I would use that methodology to say, okay, you know, do I have the right list? Okay. Do I have the right message? Okay. Do I have the right medium? It was all this stuff. Do you remember that?
There's a light bulb dimly going off my brain. I can't pull it up. I use list, offer, timing, and creativity.
Okay.
Those are the four key things I sort of look at, but that's marketing.
Yeah.
That's where I guide people through those. Like, let's look at these things because they will either hurt you a lot or help you a lot, depending on what they are.
Yeah. So today's topic, what we covered was, marketing, graphic design, storytelling for nonprofits. John, we went in a lot of directions today, right? Right. And, we could talk about this a lot more too. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you kind of want to say to our audience today, keeping in mind that most of our listeners are smaller nonprofits?
First of all, that question you just asked me is one of the best questions you can ask in an interview situation. When you're interviewing someone, a beneficiary or a donor in an interview, ask them, was there something you thought I was going to ask you that I didn't ask you? So brilliant. Well done, Steve. I like that very much. No, I never know with these calls. My background is in writing. It's in graphic design. I learned marketing from some fantastic marketers and just along the way. And I just want, I'm trying to spend time reconnecting people to their craft. The fundraising is a craft, and the idea of joyful and creative expression. Some people like to cook, some people like to garden, some people like to snorkel. These are different ways we creatively express ourselves. This work we do is a creative expression, and it can be joyful if you're doing it when you're really doing it with some passion and some care. And I'm trying to bring people back to that. Like, do your work with love is kind of what I say all the time. And if you don't want to do it, that's fine. And go do something you love. I don't care what it is. But if you're going to do this work, do it with some love and joy. Because if you do your work that way, you express yourself in your work, your donors, other humans see you for expressing yourself and are connected to you by that expression and are there for the ride. They're there to help, be connected with you, do whatever. So I'm just asking people, try to find joy and connection in your work. And creative is one expression of a way you can do that. So that's why I like talking about creativity. But it's important in these conversations, we talk about stuff that isn't as fun. Talking about lists isn't that joyful, but it's so important. And you need to understand it the best you can. So I'm here for whatever conversations people want to have, because they're asking thoughtful, intelligent questions, and they just want to get better. And I'm here to help them do their work better.
Great. I'd like to thank so very much John Lepp from Agents of Good for coming on today's podcast. And if you like today's podcast, please feel free to share it with a friend and also subscribe in your favorite podcasting app. And if you like today's podcast, please also give us a 5-star review. It really continues to help us get the word out. The podcast is in the top 1% of podcasts that nonprofits listen to. We're very proud of that. And if you're looking for a line of credit for your nonprofit, please feel free to visit our website at nonprofitmbapodcast.com. John, if anyone wants to get a hold of you, how would they go about doing that?
I'm still very easily findable online. Agentsofgood.org is a place. LinkedIn, I'm off Twitter. I'm not on Twitter as much as I used to be, or X, whatever we're calling it these days. So LinkedIn or our website, Agents of Good, is probably the best place. And if they want to pick up my book, Creative Deviations, you can find it on an Amazon near you, and it will hopefully transform your fundraising very quickly.
Sounds good. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Stephen.
So, as I mentioned before, I just got back from Costa Rica, and boy, as my I'm on vacation with my kids, and my energy level is just so much better. And I always end my podcast by saying to you, to my listeners, you guys are always trying to solve really major problems, things that are going on in the world and in your communities. And I know John and I both thank you for that. We need people like you, and John and I need to do our part as well. But I just want to remind you every single day that you need to think about yourself first. And the reason for that is you're no good to your family, friends, your employees, yourself, if you're burnt out. And solving the world's problems is a marathon. It's not a sprint. So every day you should be carving time out for either exercise, meditation, praying, just taking a break, being a human being. And then you can come back to the cause that you're trying to solve and or help. So just make sure you do that, because it's really a lot of work to solve these problems, and you need to be at your best, and we need you to be at your best. So make sure you're taking that time.
Amen.
Other than that, everybody have a great day, and thank you for listening to the Nonprofit MBA podcast.